Anyone heard any news lately? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 414 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and I'm going to tear this band-aid off right away. There is a, you can't see it on this audio platform, but there is a pink elephant behind me in the room that I feel like I kind of have to address, which I'll get to in a minute. But welcome to our big Formula E season preview. It's an extended edition of the show. Season 9, the first Gen 3 season of Formula E kicks off this weekend in Mexico City. We do like Formula E, and we want the best for it, so we thought we'd sit down and have a good old chat about it. And, you know, again, ripping off their band-aids too, because it's not been the prettiest of off-seasons for them, if we're being honest. But we'll address some of that as we go along. But first, let's go around the horn real quick, introduce you to the rest of the show. As always, RJ O'Connell, hello, sir.
Back when we last joined you, some mediocre kickboxer had quite a few luxury cars, and now he has none because he was stupid enough to leave his pizza box on the table trying to dunk on a teenage girl.
I know, isn't it amazing?
What a sentence that is. Oh my goodness.
A buzzer beater to end off the meme of the year contest. I mean, that is Luka Doncic down the stretch.
Bang! Where's Mike Breen?
He's going to say bang so effing hard right now. Also, we have Cam Buckley. Hello, sir. How's it going, man?
It's going okay. You know, just hiding from the cold. I've got my PlayStation 5 as a space heater. Life is good.
That'll do nicely. And we have a special guest with us on this edition. We had to get someone in to help us out with Formula E this year. We have Mr. S. Garlic here, everybody. Hey, Sasha, how's it going?
Hey, Dre. It's great to be on the podcast, by the way. I was on a previous Berlin Formula E special edition thingy on YouTube with you, which was
fun. Do you remember that? Tempelhof Nights. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah. Years ago, it's a shame we never got the fourth one in because we thought, you know, how fun would it be to just do an ongoing video podcast over 6 races in Berlin? But we thought we couldn't quite get the last one in there in the end. We're all a little bit tied up, but pleasure to have Sasha. You know him, you might know him from the Motion E podcast. Please do check them out after this already. Again, they do fantastic work on Formula E. And hey, you might even find an episode of a certain host on there. So you can check that out if you haven't already. Putting together a dream team, it was a really fun time, so do check that out if you haven't already. Right, you've probably seen the news by now if you follow your motorsport podcast and media in general. There's been a change of the guard at a certain rival company formerly known as WTF1, and it is your boy Dre Harrison is now the official host of the WTF1 podcast network. Holy shit.
Very, very quiet news.
Just want to say a few words regarding that first and foremost. Let me be clear. First and foremost, we are going nowhere here. I promise you. Everyone at WTF1, who the management guys are there, have given their full blessing for me to continue on here as well. So I promise you, there will be no drastic changes to Motorsport 101 at least in the short to medium term. I completely get how people thought, oh, Dre's leaving. You know, like, no, I'm not leaving. I can do both. I will do both. That is not a problem. I wanted to keep going, and, you know, like the bosses in there have been very kind and very understanding, because look, they hired me based off this, which is remarkable in a sense. Like, there are 1,000 motorsport podcasts out there these days, and that's only a slight exaggeration, and they've gone out of their way to choose us and bring us in, and more specifically bring me in to front their podcast department. So look, it's an incredible honor to be able to do that. And I'm recording this only 2 hours after doing my first ever show on their Twitch network. So that was one of the scariest things I've ever done in my life. I'll say that in full sincerity. If you're listening in, because you've come from over there because of these guys, like, look, I just want to say publicly on the air, all the best to Tom Bedingham and Matt Gallagher and whatever they decide to do going forward. You know, they're great guys, and you know, they've done a brilliant job with WTF1, and whatever they decide to do next, they're probably going to smash it, because they've manifested a brilliant community and they've done outstanding work. So all the best to them, and I sincerely will try my very best as a host of their podcast department to just, you know, bring myself to the table, and I hope you guys give us a shot and get used to us and enjoy the show. That's all I can really hope for. If you're one of those people that have just, you know, decided, you know, you're just going to follow Tom and Matty wherever, that's completely understandable. I would never hold that against you. But, you know, if you want to give us a go, please do. I think we're going to be all right, personally. So, yeah, thank you to everyone. I just want to say thank you to everyone who's listened to us. I mean, we looked back on this on our Discord server a couple of days ago, and we just thought, out of this show, we've had a guy go on to write for Jalopnik, guys writing for Racer and Race Fans, and that's RJ's case, obviously brilliant work over at Daily Sports Car. A guy go on to commentate MotoGP's World Feed, and now someone running WTF1 all off the back of this show, which is, as far as I'm concerned, fucking remarkable that we've all come from the same hub and we've all gone on to do great things as a result of it. So Cam, when are you writing for Autosport?
Never. No. Now I need to figure out something to top all of that.
World domination.
Yeah, but I'm going to have to get up early for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get up early for FE, though. So, you know, I guess I could make some time for that.
Yeah. That always works. You know, they could do with the help. But no, sincerely, thank you all so much. Like, this is a dream gig by all accounts, and this would not have been possible without all you people listening and supporting us and backing us and giving a Pokemotoring show with a bunch of misfits in the motorsport world a shot. And I promise you, M101 audience, I will not let you down in running WTF1, because it's going to be an incredible honor. And hey, if you don't like that over there, at least you still got us, right? You know, like you've got two bites at the cherry. You can't possibly go wrong. No, but sincerely, thank you all so much. It's an incredible honor. I promise you, we're going nowhere. We'll iron out some more heavy duty plans going forward in the coming days and weeks. But just for now, don't worry, we're not going anywhere. It's just going to be a little quieter, obviously, over the next few weeks, because there's not an awful lot of motorsport on. But in February and March, we'll rack things up again, as always. So thank you all so much for that. Before we get into the heavy-dutiness of the FE season, because I'm already 8 minutes in, Jesus. Just wanted to say as well, yeah, please, you can find us real quick, motorsport101.com, over there for our website. All the written stuff and all our content is over there. If you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon to keep the cost down. Patreon.com/motorsport101. If you'd like to follow us on social media, I now have to call myself Dre_WTF1 on Twitter. That's...
Nailed it! One take!
Woo! Whoa. I'm impressed myself with that one, quite frankly. So yeah, like, that's gonna take some getting used to, shit. So Dre_WTF1, at RJ O'Connell, at CBuckley917. And if you want to follow Motion Ian's and all of Sasha's content, you can. So you could do so on Linktree. Is it slash Motion_E, is it?
Yeah, so it's linktr.ee/motion_E, and you can find all the links. I'm even on Mastodon, would you believe?
He's holding out for a Mastodon reboot. We love to see it. Good luck to them, man. You could check Sasha's work out over there. It's great stuff. I do highly recommend it, if I do say so myself. Right, without further ado, let's get into the Formula E season preview.
Whew. 22 drivers and teams are all rushing in for one thing. They have to defeat Andros.
I'm not sure that...
Hell, I just feel really old.
You're telling us. You're the youngest guy here. Welcome to our formulary season preview. And again, this has been an episode of kind of addressing elephants in the room already, and this is kind of another one here now. Formulary kicks off this weekend at Mexico City, and to be honest, if you didn't know that going into this episode, I wouldn't have blamed you, because it's barely been advertised. It's felt pretty quiet in the grand scheme of things in Formulary's backyard, and it's, well, we thought we'd address some of the concerns going into this season before we really got started. So, Good luck, guys. We're gonna get through the shit first. I think that's the best way of handling this. So then we'll go into the teams one by one. And, well, spoiler alert: only one retained lineup in the field compared to last season. One out of 11, and there were 12 teams last year. So that kind of says it all, really. But let's talk about some of the manufacturer problems first and foremost. Because, I mean, look, let's just cut to the chase here. The last 2 years, we've lost BMW, Mercedes, and Audi from this series as factory teams. And to make matters worse, it's kind of expanded into other areas. It's not like they've just dropped out of motorsport or just cut something for the sake of it. They've moved resources around. We now know that Audi is going to be joining Formula One in 2026 through Sauber. BMW is taking their talents to the hypercar class of prototype racing in LMDH over there. And Mercs are trying to win their crowns back in Formula One. And we all know that, you know, that's going to be a fight between them and Red Bull. Porsche apparently are not too keen. Spoiler alert, folks, you'll hear a lot of Porsche quotes coming up in this episode, because they've been very outspoken about some of the issues in the series in this offseason. And apparently, according to people you may know, I've seen clips from Sam Smith say this as well, they're on the fence about whether they want to continue down the road as well. So they nearly
put same with them, where they're all in with the LMDH program, as we know, and still evaluating an F1 entry, although nothing concrete planned yet.
Yeah, of course they were more than prepared to buy out half of Red Bull to make that happen, and Red Bull understandably were like, maybe we don't want to give away equity in our team, which, you know, it was always going to be a bit of a complicated one, that, and that's how it turned out. But yeah, they almost nearly boycotted the Valencia test on safety grounds, because I'm sure you obviously kept a closer eye on the Valencia test as well. I mean, there seems to be issues with the brakes on these cars, right? Or the lack of them, so to speak.
There are, Dre, and it's all down to revolutionary technology that isn't quite working in the optimal way right now. But before I begin with that, I just want to very quickly say congratulations on your big move. I'm really happy for you. The only reason I would not have been happy for you would have been if you'd got the job as Autosport Formula E correspondent. So I'm very happy that you didn't.
Oh, well, you know, their loss is WTF1's game. Thank you, man. That's very kind of you. But crack on. No, this isn't about me.
All right. So the aim was to move eventually in Formula E Gen 4, which is obviously a long way down the road, towards all regen braking. And so the idea was to only have one set of brakes on the car and to have the other set of brakes be entirely regenerative. The problem being that during Valencia testing, some of the cars, including most spectacularly, I think, Sebastian Buemi's Envision, were found to have regen braking that wasn't quite working optimally. And there's been obviously investigations and a lot of looking closely into why that would be, but I think it's a case of rolling out the new Gen 3 car with limited testing for all the teams. So all teams have had private testing, and they've had the public testing in Valencia as well. But all of the teams, I think, are starting on the back foot, because obviously you'd always like to have more testing in motorsport. And I think the same thing for Formula E. They did a lot of testing with the original chassis they built with Benoit Trelier, who I'm sure you remember, the former French Formula 3 champion.
Super GT legend Benoit Trelier.
Mm. Exactly. And I think, yeah, so I think they probably thought they had this worked out, but obviously when a car gets into mass production, you know, as our friend Mr. Musk knows, things go wrong in the build process sometimes. Mm. So
sometimes.
There's a lot of allegedlies here. There's a lot of things that, you know, sitting in my cozy room in Tallinn, Estonia, I don't necessarily know, but it does seem like there is an issue. And they're trying to cover for this, by the way, by building in resiliency with an emergency brake. But that will not make its debut until at least the Diria E-Prix, the second round of the series, means that we go into Mexico City with what is known to be potentially a faulty braking system. And, you know, a circuit that does reach high speeds, particularly at the end of the pit straight. And you've got to ask whether they should be going ahead, really, with a first round of a world championship with a system that, you know, they can't be 100% sure is safe in all cases.
Yeah, that sound. I mean, I've read enough about this, and I was going to go to you just to back me up on this, but that sounds like a very bad idea. That sounds like severe safety issues, because that was the pattern I was hearing, that if guys lost control of their cars at speed, the braking system would not be able to save them in some cases, or if there was like a technical problem with the car, then the braking system might fail, and then they would find stopping the car very difficult, and that is deeply troubling, because we know these cars aren't reliable at the best of times.
And I mean, we've seen examples of that with other series using the regenerative braking, where we saw sometimes an LMP1H, if the hybrid system would even, you know, fall out of sync a little bit, a car would just go skating off the road. Or if, you know, famously in Canada 2014, Mercedes lost all of their MGUK, all of their regenerative braking on the rears, and they started having locking, and then Lewis's rear brakes failed and he had to retire from the race. That was already compromising the braking enough with a partial braking system. It is the entire rear brake setup for these new FE cars. And so without an emergency brake, and, you know, in the event that the MGU recovery does not work properly, you effectively don't have rear brakes on these cars.
And we did see this kind of possibly allegedly happen in Gen 2 as well. I'm sure you all remember the big crash from a practice start in practice for Eduardo Mortara in Diria 2 years ago.
Yes.
Now, there were lots of allegations about that, and I'm not about to get myself brought to court by any of the protagonists there. But essentially, you know, Mortara, a very skilled driver, as we'll come to later, ended up going straight into the wall because he didn't have any braking. Now, the reason for that allegedly possibly might have been because when you start a Formula E car, the cars are manually regulated so that you don't have regen braking, or the Gen 2 car was, so you didn't have regen braking going right off a standing start. This was partly for safety reasons, I believe, and maybe also partly for sporting reasons. Anyway, the problem was that you then are relying on your mechanical brakes going into the corner, and if there is any kind of issue with your mechanical brakes, and again, I have no reason to suggest that I'm certain that there was in that case, then you might end up with difficulties, as Mortara clearly did. Now, I'm couching that with the fact that there was also investigations done at the time into the Mercedes powertrain. There were lots of potential reasons why Mortara might have apparently lost it under braking, but we did see something similar with less tense consequences in Berlin that season for Jake Dennis in the BMW Andretti. So there have been braking related, powertrain related first corner issues in Formula E in the past, and it's a shame that we've got this reliability issue going into the first race with a brand new car, obviously.
Indeed. Not ideal at all. I mean, it goes hand in hand with supply issues as well from the manufacturing side of things.
The old
old supply issues chestnut that we've all been facing in these uncertain times. God, what has it been, 3 years since the world first went into lockdown?
Yeah, not ideal. A certain global conflict didn't help either. I mean, again, Fortius Florian Modlinger was very open about this. He described it, quote, as F3 levels of resource, which, that doesn't sound good. Quote said, how the parts are tested and then handed over to the manufacturer, this whole process we clearly need to review for Gen 4 and draw the correct conclusions, because how it was handled for Gen 3, we are clearly not happy. We cannot be satisfied with how and with which status the project had when we got handed over the common parts. This needs to be reviewed. I worked in the past in different series, and there are different ways of interacting between the sporting instance, like the FIA or the DMSB and the promoter and the manufacturers. We need change for Gen 4 because the situation we are in at the moment, I clearly don't want to be in again.
And actually, what worries me so much is that there are so many quotes coming out and so many sources briefing and leaking that it's got a vibe of A1GP powered by Ferrari 2008, and I don't like that vibe.
No, and Modlinger was one of the few guys who's gone on the record about this. A lot apparently of similar resentment that obviously didn't want to put their name on it at the time, but the resentment was clearly not there. And yeah, it goes hand in hand with what we've been saying, not ideal at all.
There's way too much smoke for there to not be fire at this point.
Yeah, and to go hand in hand with that, we've also got some major changes to the format too.
Well, this could be good. These may not all be bad.
Yeah, they're interesting. We'll go through some of the key ones together here. Now, race format, we are scrapping the 45-minute time system. Races will no longer be what we had before. It was 45 minutes plus extra time for any yellows in the bulk of the race and the plus one lap at the end. We are going to straight-up lap count, folks. So we're going back to what we were before. It's going to be a straight-up lap count. Again, this didn't exactly go over well during the Valencia test when they did a mock race, and everyone was like, oh, how much are we meant to save here? Which is never ideal. They've gone back to lap format on this one. Fan boost is gone, everybody. Fan boost is gone! Yes!
Our long national nightmare is over. We can finally stop publishing our think pieces about how FanBoost is actively turning the race results into a popularity contest, even though most times it didn't do anything, really.
No, not much in the grand
not
scheme of
whole
things.
Lot.
This wasn't anywhere near the huge deal that I think a lot of people on the internet wanted to make it seem like it was, but it was the same six or seven names pretty much every weekend winning the fan boost, and that's a problem. And you could argue you shouldn't have fan interjection.
The whole idea of an internet vote for boost is, shall we say, problematic in some respects anyway. And if you're wondering what I mean, you can always search Daniel Apt quotes from 2018 on that.
Oh, he hated it. He was foaming from the mouth when he was asked about that in 2018.
Didn't he benefit most of it from anybody?
Yeah, he liked it. He was popular at Daniel Apt when he was in the series because he was getting fan boost votes quite often, if I remember correctly. So even though it was benefiting him, he clearly still didn't like it, which is fair enough. Now we were gonna have fast charging pit stops with new technology. And maybe a mandatory pit stop system coming in for this season, but they were scrapped in the build up to the Valencia test due to, again, reliability concerns and time pressure, more supplying issues. They weren't sure the technology was going to work properly. I think I'm right in saying, Sasha, and they just decided, you know what, best to scrap it for the season.
Well, according to Formula E's latest press release on the new sporting regulations, they are planning to pilot attack charge, as they call it, at some point during the season. But obviously they will want to iron out the issues we've already spoken about with Gen 3 before they get to that.
Yeah. And I don't think they wanted to have a... what's the best way? I don't think they wanted to obviously introduce it mid-season and obviously... That's going to build competitive question marks again if you introduce such a massive rule change halfway through a season or partway into a season or what have you, which obviously wasn't going to help either.
Absolutely.
So.
And also, we've got a perfectly serviceable push to pass gimmick in terms of, if I can use gimmick in a good way, in terms of attack mode, which I think 98% of fans actually like, and which is fairly easy to follow for the viewer, and which is actually quite enjoyable, I think.
Yeah, I'm completely okay with that. One last big change in terms of format as well. Attack mode. It's been renamed. It's now called Attack Charge Validation, which, you know, it rolls right off the tongue. That's going to be the new system for attack mode, where obviously you would put off to one side and you would have an increased usage out of your powertrain for, well, depends on the race. Obviously, there was a bit up and down. Sometimes it was 1 to 3 times you had to use attack mode in a race, and the time obviously varied race to race. I think the race directors wanted to obviously mix it up, especially for doubleheader weekends, to try and keep the teams on their toes a little bit. It's going to be straight up 4 minutes now per race of this attack charge value. I think it's 350 kilowatts now during the race for ACV.
Yeah, if I can just add something as well.
Sure.
I believe they, or at least according to the latest press release that I've read, I believe they've gone back to the name attack mode for the thing that they're starting the season with. And I believe attack charge is the new thing they're trying to introduce later in the season. But I may be reading outdated information. I got that from the FE website, but you may have later information than me.
Yeah, that sounds about right from where I'm hearing. But also, the interesting part of that is also there's also going to be another strategic element to this as well, because you can actually, you have to use it twice during the race, but you can choose the length of each stint between 1 and 3 minutes. So again, when it comes to harvesting, saving power, using the extra power to maybe overtake, it's going to be a strategic element of the use of ACV. So that could also be interesting. We'll have to see how that plays out when we actually get into the racing itself. As I agree with RJ, these aren't all bad changes as far as I'm concerned. I think the lap count works better as just a more ironclad race format as opposed to time, because the extra time rule was a bit all over the place at times. And, you know, let's not talk about Valencia that one time.
Let's not. I do think most of these changes are for the better.
I agree.
Kilowatt deductions, anyone?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly looking at stuff like fan boost, regardless of whether it had the effect on the racing or not, not having it there, I think, is just a better look.
It is a better look, and actually, you know, again, tipping on the negative, it is worth mentioning Valencia 21 and Puebla 21 as well. For Formula E, every on a roughly annual basis, sometimes twice annually, does something where it appears to be immolating itself. Now, quite how it's going to do that this season, you just hope it's going to be something non-dangerous.
I hope so.
But as King said in your last podcast, the vibes are just chef's kiss right now.
Oh yeah, immaculate. We hadn't even talked about some of the outward facing logistical problems, like the website, for example. I was digging up some of the stats for the set list, and the website was struggling to load. Drivers' portraits were taking 10 plus seconds to fire up. They had a big old rebrand in terms of the logo.
Live, laugh, love, baby.
Oh yeah.
Formula Eurovision.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
They really do like the Eurovision logo. It's crazy. Like, I love that half our show is American, and most of the time, two-thirds of the show is American, and even they were like, it looks like the Eurovision logo, and I was actually quite impressed RJ pointed that out. that is a thing. Like, the rebrand did not go well. The fact that the survey they were asking people about it didn't have any negative options is not a good look.
Please tell us you like us.
Exactly. There was missing content on the website 6 days out from a Grand Prix to start your new generation of car. I mean, that is tragic.
You can sum up this off season overall as everything is behind schedule. Even the stuff that doesn't matter is behind schedule, and there's just a lot of scrambling going on in the cars, in the series, behind the scenes with stuff like the website, that just doesn't seem like it's quite ready for this season to start.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems they've had for a while, actually, since before they became a world championship, is that their commercial team and their communications team, and I'm really not knocking the amount of work they do because they all work incredibly hard, but the people at the top, including Jamie Reigel, the CEO of Formula E, everyone since Alejandro Agag, who is a proper startup guy, I view him as like a sort of motorsporting Steve Jobs. I think he is truly a mad genius. So he stepped aside and he put in place a communications and commercial team, which he thought would take the sport forward. I think what's happened is they've recruited from big blue chip sports and big blue chip sporting enterprises like Manchester United, for example.
I did hear about this, yeah.
Yeah. And if you've got a former member of the Man United commercial team running your sport as a CEO, then obviously he's going to lean on solutions he's picked up from the Premier League, which is a place where you can put it on Sky, you can charge people whatever it is, 100 quid a month, because you know it's an event. People are going to pay, as Gary Neville would say, at this moment in time to see it. And people are going to want to pile in there. With Formula E, I think you've got to market it a bit more like a startup. You've got to assume that the audience is not there, and you've got to have a free element for everyone to build it up. Now, other people, including the great Hazel Southwell, have advocated for sticking the whole thing on YouTube, and I've got to agree with that.
100%.
I didn't agree with Sam Smith who, brilliant journalist, but I didn't agree with the one point he made about the Formula E Unplugged documentary this season. He said, praise be, it's on terrestrial television. That's not the point anymore. People don't go to terrestrial television. They go on the internet for their entertainment. And I just think there's got to be a strong bedrock of free-to-air content, as there used to be with Formula E. And if they want to get their audience levels back to, honestly, where it was at the start of Gen 2, that's what they need to do.
Well, look at what Toto was saying about pulling Mercedes out of the series. That, look, there just wasn't enough eyes on it.
Yeah. And when you're...
I wanted to say something. Because, it's awesome that Formula E does have a presence on YouTube, but the viewership isn't there. And, if you want to try, free-to-air over-the-air, traditional television... Well, Channel 4 is not going to give that to you because they're not airing it live on Channel 4's linear channel. They're only showing tape delayed highlights of this on the traditional boob tube.
Yeah, yes,
and Channel 4's YouTube at times last season was getting viewerships of around 2,000. Well, there are many Twitch streams with more than that. So I really think something needs to be done. And What I'm seeing and hearing is a lot of people being told, don't be too critical, be very careful. And I actually think that Formula E should be in a position where it's listening to criticism a bit more.
Absolutely. I'll say this for free. We talked about on a number of occasions about what is IndyCar doing to get people to watch things that aren't the Indianapolis 500. Are they trying the right things? Do they care? I feel at times like Formula E just truly does not care at times. They have their core audience of people who are already invested, and they feel like they don't need to try. That's what it seems like on the surface to me.
And, that mentality, if indeed it's there, has, look at the manufacturer exodus for series that are just more viable to more eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's the vibe check regarding the series in general. Let's get into the runners and riders of season 9 of Formula E. And traditionally on this show, when we do a season preview, we go in reverse championship order, which means the first team we're looking at here is... Wait a minute, does that say DS Penske? this is going to need some explaining. Yes, for those who missed it towards the end of our season 8 coverage of Formula E... It was a long time coming, but the mega powers of Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, well, maybe not Randy Savage, have combined to form DS Penske, and they've got quite possibly the strongest Formula E lineup maybe ever. The reigning Series 8 champion, Stoffel Vandoorne, he's taking the number one plate. I love that. I'm old school.
Hashtag defend the one.
Defend the one. Sorry, Joseph. And alongside him in the 25 car, friend and yours, veteran Jeff, John Eric Verne, of course. The marriage is over, of course, but Stoffel Van Dorn will be with Jeff together.
No, now we have Joffel.
Joffel. I'm not sure that's going to stick somehow, but we'll go with it. We thought we'd give a little snippet into each team as we go on. So yeah, DS Penske, the off-season story, arguably over Christmas. DS Penske was an alliance long in the making, as far back as 2021, when original owners T. Cheetah were looking for outside investment when a crypto bro deal went belly up. It took a little while for the deal to finally complete, as the merger took time to iron out, but now DS have combined with Penske and added the reigning series champion Stoffel Van Dorn. Jay Penske stays on as team principal, with Nicholas Madwica staying on as deputy principal and executive vice president. Most of the key players from the previous relationship are staying on, and if the testing talk is true, they probably have the best powertrain on the grid right now. They also took T-Cheetah's gold and black livery, just in case they wanted to kick the previous runners in the teeth one more time on the way out. The latter is aiming to get back on the grid in season 10. Some brief words from Stoffel says, "I'm really happy to be joining DS Penske from next season, and it's a big change for me after 4 years at Mercedes, but I am very excited to start working with the team. DS has achieved excellent results in the past, winning the drivers and teams titles twice. It's a good record, and one I hope I can add to before long. It's also a great pleasure to be associated with the only double champion in Formula E. I believe that Jeff and I will form one of the strongest lineups for season 9. It's hard to disagree with him really on that one, when there's 3 titles between them and bona fide outstanding records here, gents. But oh my god, Dragon Racing, the artist formerly known as Dragon Penske, might now actually be really good.
Okay, Dragon. Okay, Jay Penske. You want to prove that you are worthy of the family lineage? Here is your opportunity. Everything is laid out for you and the rest of this organization to succeed. Go out there and do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think the best thing about DS Penske is that the organization appears to have allowed Jay Penske, or forced Jay Penske, to take a step back, because, you know, he appears to be a really good magazine publisher who, you know, runs a team like a really good magazine publisher would. And I'm glad that they've brought in people like Thomas Chevauchet as I think he's back as team principal, having been in charge of T-Cheetah latterly. And I actually I was looking at the driver combination. I was thinking, well, that's a Formula E dream team in itself. But Stoffel Van Dorn and his title success, and just how fantastically he did last season, and the lack of any F1 gossip around him, for example, I think that says, I mean, okay, folks, we've all worked in day jobs in places where this has been proven, I'm sure. If you do a fantastic job every day, you turn up to work, you work as if you're on rails, and then you get the job done on time and you go home, there's no drama there, and you don't get the accolades that you do if you shout and scream and cause a bit of drama in the office sometimes. And I just think Stoffel, he is a relatively uninteresting guy to listen to. He just goes in and does the job. He's basically like Harry Kane without the penalty misses. And I think that Stoffel suffers because he's not seen as, you know, enough of a character. He's basically the Roger Federer of this story, if you like, and that's a shame, because he deserves a lot more recognition than he's getting right now.
Well, I mean, looking at the conflagration that was McLaren in 2017 and 2018 in Formula One, not a whole lot of interesting quotes out of him. It was usually the guy across from him in the garage who is giving us new sound bites every week.
Indeed.
And yeah, just quietly goes on and gets the job done. That's kind of Stoffel's whole MO.
Yes.
This is a really good team.
It's an incredible team. Well, on paper, one of the strong... I mean, you're putting together a lot of DST Cheetah's management with two of the strongest drivers this series has ever had.
Yeah, this is basically DST Cheetah with a different name.
By all accounts.
DS Cheetah and their predecessors, Pour one out for Team Aguri.
Oh, God, yeah. I still have a signed cap. To be fair, who didn't have a signed cap back then? Yeah, it is an incredibly strong team. Probably one of the favorites going forward. Again, the murmurs at the Valencia test was that they've probably got the best powertrain as well, which, well, that could be a terrifying combo.
And I want to drop in a word for Jev as well before we move on, because he has had to deal with the anxiety of being a partial shareholder in Techeeta and having that psychodrama of Techeeta not being able to seemingly pay its bills for the last couple of years. I know from other people's reports that Antonio Felix da Costa was also suffering at times to keep his eyes on the prize because of that. I think going into a team where you've got none of those worries, but you've got all of the best people that you work with in the past, and also a great teammate to play off, I think we'll see Jev's ability to build consistently a title challenge come to the fore here.
This man was a two-time back-to-back Formula E champion of the world.
Yeah. The only person to ever do that. His resume speaks for itself. There's a very strong case you could say he's maybe Formula E's greatest driver in its young series history. Yeah, I mean, probably you're arguing between him and probably Lucas Degrassi. It's a bona fide super team. So let's see how it all goes wrong. So that's a joke. They're probably going to be fine. Like, let's go to the other end of the scale, as in bad team, expected bad. Neo 333, everybody. Don't all groan at once.
Minus one, Oliver Turvey.
I never thought I would see the day that Oliver Turvey is not on a Formula E grid. I'm going to miss him. He's gone to DS Penske as a racing advisor and reserve, I believe. So, I mean, look, that is a very valuable name to have in the backroom staff. That, like, everyone and their mother I've ever spoken to about Formula E gushes about how brilliant Oliver Turvey is as a mind and as a driver. And my man did the Lord's work in for many a bad Neo team. So, yeah, like, losing Turvey is a big blow to this team. Here's what else I wrote about it. Makes us a bit sad. Don't worry, he's heading to the DS Penske Super Team as a reserve driver and supporting advisor. Shrewd. Despite Dan Ticktum's, let's call it, enthusiasm for the series, he stays on in the third.
That word is doing a lot of work in that sentence.
Hence the inverted commas. He stays on in the 33 cars with new teammate Sergio Sette Câmara, who we still think it's funny when Autosport said last year that joining Neo was a reward for gutting it out under the old Dragon regime. That is a true story. They did actually say this.
That's rough.
Quote from the man himself. Being consistent in terms of just finishing the races, doing the laps you need to do plays a bigger role. Then as the teams get more mileage in the car, all of them should converge into having the same level of reliability, more or less, give or take. And then the teams that have more performance should stand out. I definitely think that in the first two or three rounds, it will be extremely important to be consistent and to have the reliability in place. Well, at least Sergio's being modest about it. I just want to finish the first few rounds. Would that be nice? Look, I like Sergio Sette Câmara a lot, and I think he had a lot of upside when he was at Dragon. I think if Neo has a half-decent car, I think he could actually do quite well over there.
To go back to the old Star Fox Gaming reference from the top, I was actually thinking about Slippy Toad, as you do. I was just thinking, you know, Slippy Toad seems like the Wash character, the one that you don't want in the game. But then you find that he's the mastermind behind building the Landmaster, and I think a surprisingly intelligent and surprisingly perceptive competitor you've got in Sergio Sette Câmara to make an awkward segue back to the topic. And I really like Sergio. I really rate him. I think that Dragon was not the environment in which to build a career necessarily. And actually, Neo 333, yes, they started off really rubbish because they were picking up old Dragon powertrains, effectively grandfathered powertrains, and they were starting from the ashes of the Neo Works team, but they now got a decent little setup. I interviewed Russell O'Hagan, their team principal last season, deputy team principal.
Yes.
And he's a really smart guy. And what he said was, yes, Oliver's like having an engineer. He's Oliver Turvey. He was a fantastic influence on the team, but he was also quite willing to big up just how technical Dan Tictum is. And, obviously, Dan Tictum is always going to get you a quote that you don't necessarily want in the press. But he's also apparently quietly behind the scenes someone who, and you know, Ida Wood mentioned this on my podcast. He's someone who maybe can seem a bit irascible with the press because he wants to get onto technical matters and talk to the engineers about stuff. And I think that anarchy side of him, that sort of nerdy techie side, if they can harness that, he could potentially build a career in Formula E. Now, I would say the lack of enthusiasm was palpable from him at times last season. You're absolutely right, guys. But I would also say, I think I'm willing to give him this season I'm willing to give him a second season, as Alan Partridge would say, because I just think if they can keep his focus on technical matters and if they can keep a microphone out of his way, then he could potentially be on for a good season.
You giving the benefit of the doubt here, gents? Sasha's made a compelling argument.
Like, yeah, the driving talent on offer is never really the problem with either of these dudes. Yes, Sete Camara and Tictum have had their share of ups and downs throughout the years. They've had their share of opportunities gone the wayside, whether that's just been for bad luck or self-made misfortune. They got a couple of good wheelmen at this team. If the car's anywhere halfway decent, hopefully it vindicates that talent.
I think that's the big question, is how is the car going to be?
And I
think they bring up a great point that, yeah, reliability early on, especially given the question marks about this car, that is going to bag some teams a whole lot of points early on.
100%.
Yes. And if there are reliability issues for some of the top teams, then they could stand to pick something up. Also, the other thing is, you know, when a new rule set comes in, you know, we see this in F1 all the time, it's a great leveler for some of the small teams. Now, Neo 333 builds in association with a small British company down the road from its factory, effectively builds its own powertrain. So if it's found something that the others haven't, or if the other teams suffer from powertrain unreliability and they don't, well, you know, it is going to be a lottery in Mexico City.
Yeah, we're gonna wait and see. Big question marks over that team, but the driving talent certainly is up there. Next up in line, Nissan. I can't believe I'm talking about Nissan this early, and you can't see it, but RJ is currently gushing with delight as I say that in their Sakura based car, lovely livery if I do say so myself. In the 17 car, Norman Nahto back in the series, and in the 23 car, Sascha Fedestraz makes his full season debut. Still makes me a little bit sad that the E-Dam's name is no more. Also, long-standing veteran Sebastian Buemi had finally decided to move on from the underperforming, now fully Japanese team. Nissan has gone all French of its lineup, ironically, with Norman Nahto returning to the series after standing in at the end of season 8 with Jaguar, and his partner is Sascha Fenestras, Super GT star and last year's Super Formula runner-up. Keep an eye on the fact that their powertrains are also powering McLaren. We'll get to them later. Also, shout out to the Sakura livery. That shit is dope. That's what I said in my notes.
Great livery.
I can't wait to be on track, and I'm really excited to get to Valencia and start testing soon. It's a big step for me to race in Formula E, and to see the professionalism and dedication of the team is only pushing me to achieve best possible results. We're building up nicely to the season in the simulator, tweaking and developing the car, and start the campaign in a positive way. That was Sascha Fenestras just before the Valencia test. What do you make of this?
Dude, it's been a great couple of weeks for Sascha Fenestras, because no matter who won the World Cup final, he was guaranteed to win. Remember, he is also an Argentine citizen as well. He represents both nationalities. If we get the Sascha Fenestras that we saw last year in Japan, you're getting a great driver. Last year's Super Formula runner-up. Won a race and competed for a GT500 title for most of this past season. In fact, in his debut year, had 4 podiums in GT500. That was back in the COVID year 2020. The talent, again, never questioned. I do find it funny that He started off as a Renault Sport Academy driver and then got dropped by them. And now, well, he's back in the Alliance.
What's left of it anyway? Is Carlos Ghosn still doing crimes?
I don't know. The Jeopardy suitcase.
But yeah, I mean,
he's got documentary movies about him. So
I saw the really entertaining documentary, and I just hope that these two Frenchmen don't end up leaving Nissan in a violin case the way he did. But
yeah, I mean, going back to Fenestraz, right. I mean. Yeah. Yeah, everything you plug him into, he's very, very rapid in.
I think it's exciting for Nissan that they're building from the bottom here, and actually the lack of expectations might work in their favor, because you know there were many reasons why Nissan were relatively slow towards the end of Gen 2. One of which was the fact that they had to abandon their phenomenally brilliant twin motor powertrain in the first season of Gen 2. And that put them on the back foot developmentally for the rest of the time. And obviously, organizationally, they recovered well from the tragic death of Jean-Paul Driot as well. But Nissan took a much greater part. And in fact, it's entirely a Nissan team. And now they've got to prove that organizationally they can run a, you know, fast, nimble, agile Formula E organization, Nissan. And I think Nato is obviously a proven winner in Formula E. And
that's right. His full season he did, he won his last race, knowing that he wasn't going to come back the following year. By the way, lovely touch for him to run the 17, made famous by his friend, the legendary Jules Bianchi.
Of course. Lovely touch. Yes.
And also a brilliant sim driver and developer as well for Jaguar. So I think Norman Nato could be their really good card. I guess I can't say trump card anymore, but yes, if we end up with the Sascha Fenestraz of Japan, then obviously that's going to be a surprise package there.
I'm inclined to agree. We kind of want Nissan back up the front. They've been struggling since they had part of their car ruled out for years. I want to see them back up the front again. It's not season two anymore, but still, I think it'll be pretty neat at least. Next up, Mahindra. This is going to be a fun vibe team right here. In the number eight car, Oliver Rowland, Formula E's favourite Yorkshireman, where we love to see him. And in the 11 car, wow, that's a coupe. Lucas Degrassi, in a Mahindra.
Okay.
Safe to say, a loud off-season for India's finest. Poaching Lucas Degrassi as he moved on from the artists now known as Maserati to spearhead Mahindra, alongside the sport's favourite Yorkshireman, Oliver Rowland. But the controversial move was within the higher-ups. Dilbar Gill, long-standing team principal, was moved on and replaced by Frederick Bertrand, former FIA sporting department head and director of Formula E. As you can imagine, this went over well with some of the other teams. Guess who came out with this quote? It's surprising news for us, especially when you think about the position he was in and how much insights and details he knows about all competitors. With such a short transition phase from FIA to becoming head of a competitor team, it's just surprising news for us, and especially the quick transition time is surprising. I think some questions will be raised, but it is as it is. If you guessed that was Florian Modlinger of Porsche, you'd be right. see if you could spot a pattern here. Folks, politically messy one, this. I mean, does this not scream conflict of interest a little bit here?
It screams it from the rooftops. And just in case anyone's wondering why this is a problem, you know, think of it in this way. It's like Haas firing Gunter Steiner and replacing him with Michael Massey. You know, it's difficult.
That might be the only way to make that team more hated than they are right now. That would be, you know, I almost want to see that just to watch F1 Twitter implode in on itself. But you know, like picking up someone we had a very similar situation with Ferrari picking up, I want to say it was Mekis a couple years ago. Just lots of talk from the other teams that pretty much amounted to nothing.
Yeah, but actually the thing that might stand Mahindra in good stead on the track, apart from their organizational change, which I actually think might be positive from a performance point of view, They are working in lockstep with the Abt Cupra team, so that they're effectively working as a four-car team. That's allowed within the regs. If you share a powertrain with another team, you're allowed to use their telemetry and speak to them and so on. And I think the fact that you've got the Abt organization and you've got Lucas Degrassi, well, I think that there's an awful lot there's an awful lot of number of years of engineering knowledge there to use.
Yeah, that is a big deal. And I mean, let's again, Modninger went on the record. Most of his rivals were like, well, you know, we wish him all the best over there, but you could kind of get the resentment underneath the surface about how I think the team bosses really felt about this one, because it is not a great look for the former director of the series to become a team principal. That is a huge red flag to me.
If this had happened, you know, middle of Gen 2, I would imagine there'd be a lot more questions asked.
No kidding.
More than now.
But, you know, it's a strong team, I think, on paper. I think Oliver Roland is way better than his 14th in last year's title suggests. I think,
without doubt,
I think Roland is a very solid driver. He was pushing that Mahindra into some really obscure spots at times last year. You could see him, like, God bless him, he was trying.
Second from the pole in the first race at Seoul.
Oh, yeah. Like,
I'm a poet and I don't even know it. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, like, he was fast over a lap, but, like, over a race, I just don't think they had the energy conservation, to keep up with some of the big hitters. But he's a good driver, and Lucas is Lucas. Lucas, I mean, he was nicknamed the Butcher last year. We all know what he can be like on track, but we also know he's a damn good driver in this series. He's probably the blueprint of, if you're ahead of Lucas Degrassi in this series, you're probably doing very well. He's just a consistent top-tier threat, can win almost any given race on paper. Look, that is as good a driver as Mahindra could have brought in the circumstances, right? Given they're a midfielder.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think so.
That's a hell of a coupe. It's a messy one, shall we say, and good luck to them where that's concerned.
Yeah, it's a political mess, and that's before we leave Lucas Degrassi to the side.
Oh yeah. good luck to them on that one. Cam, it's your favorite. It's a tag here.
They're still here. They're still here.
They might have a foot out the door, but they are still here. Tag Heuer, Porsche Formula E team.
There's an upgrade here.
We got Antonio Felix da Costa. Like, holy shit, we got Antonio Felix da Costa.
That's a pull.
You got Antonio Felix da Costa, and he's going to be driving your LMDHs, maybe.
Well, yeah.
That's a coup. And you obviously Pascal Wehrlein sticks around as well in the 94 car. But for, was it season 6 champion, I want to say, the Costa was?
Champion at the Berlin Sets Top.
It's an interesting transitional period for Porsche. They've shown promise, but much frustration as potential title campaigns have never really materialized. Last season, they only scored 16 points across their final 6 weekends, compared to 116 in the first 10. But they've gone big with this soft reboot, with season 6 champion and Berlin specialist Antonio Felix da Costa replacing Andre Lotterer alongside the always high up Pascal Wehrlein. They're also supplying the Andretti team as direct midfield competitors. More on them in a minute. A wild Cam rejoices. But our Porsche just...
I don't know if I'd call what I'm doing right now rejoicing.
But our Porsche just here for a fun time and not a long time. Their future in the series sounds very much up in the air. Quote from AFDC himself saying, I think it's probably the biggest two opposites I could go to from DSTG to Porsche. Luckily for me, being with BMW before, it's not fully new. I'm used to this German way of doing things. There's also a lot of stuff that I can bring from DS, because sometimes being in a smaller house, there are positives to take from there, and we did a lot of good things at DSTG. For me, I feel strong, and I feel like I've got a variety of experiences now where I can adapt and really focus on what I do best. What do we make of this one, folks? And Cam, I'm going to go to you first on this one, because you're the Porsche man. It's only fair we go to you on this one. It's an upgrade on driving talent, certainly. I mean, the cost is big.
I love me some Antonio Felix da Costa, but the driving talent is not where I have the concern. We got to see more out of Porsche this year. I mean, they got the win, finally, legally, this time. in crushing fashion at Mexico last year, doing an extra lap just because they could. And that's pretty much as good as it got. I mean, by the end of the season, they were scrapping for minor points. They left a couple potential wins on the table. Monaco is the one I can think of, where Wehrlein's car just, the secondary battery failed and the car just died out on track. For a company with expectations as high as Porsche, we got to see something resembling a title challenge this year.
I mean, they're what, seventh overall this last season? That's just not good enough for a team as big as them. They've gone hard on the driving lineup. I mean, the Costa is definitely an upgrade on Lotterer. Lotterer was, well, shall we say, a bit all over the place at the best of times in his Formula E career. It's still winless somehow.
The winless wonder.
Also, as a quick side note, given we are keeping the dual qualifying format, I still need more turns to camera from Andre Lotterer looking like he's a Bond villain, just for my own amusement. He was very good at that, if I do say so myself.
I also like the insinuation of Porsche just here for fun time and not a long time. Like, look, at the end of the day, we all need short-term companionship. We all need one-night stands in our lives. And I think that's what Porsche is going for here. They're just looking to swipe right on success.
What do you reckon, Sasha?
I think Porsche might not be there for a long time, but they're also not there for a good time. I mean, this is a corporate team we're talking about. So they need to be dominating if they're going to get what they consider to be their money's worth out of Formula E. I do think that obviously the driver lineups are a step up. Antonio Felix da Costa is probably the best that you can get in terms of available drivers. And I think they took him quite early last season as well, although the announcement was obviously after the season. Wehrlein, consistently brilliant, but nothing else to say really about him. But
no more excuses.
No. Exactly. Yeah, the worry that I have is that at the time when Porsche entered Formula E, obviously it was post-Dieselgate, and all the VW brands were pivoting heavily to being seen to be doing something about being all electric. And as time went on, sports cars got its shit together. LMDH started to look like a low-cost solution, as you guys all know, and that just wasn't there at the time. And I feel like Porsche's natural home is sports cars, and I worry for their future in the sport. I think the fact that there are already noises coming out suggests that maybe they've already made their minds up. I hope I'm wrong.
Especially given all the talk about the state of the Gen 3 car and how the series has approached it. Most of that criticism has come directly from Porsche.
Yeah, like they've been on the record and talking to the media about this so much more than everybody else has. A lot of them have apparently been saying it under the table or saying similar thoughts, but not willing to put their name on it. Florian Wendlinger has been very open to the media about
terminally this. Online.
Oh yeah, we've already got very candid. We've got an early contender for the Never Log Off Award early doors, so that's going to be fun to watch as the season goes on. But yeah, gosh, there's Porsche for you, and now their sister team, the Avalanche Andretti Formula E team.
Boy, hey, they actually let Andretti into this one?
I can't believe Andretti. How could they possibly understand the depth and complexity of European motorsport? How could possibly understand it with their smooth, like, smooth brain 10 IQ minds?
I'm looking forward to this so much, though.
I have no idea. I think the excuse I have written on my notes is they wrote a fat check. Anyway, Andretti in the 27 car, our tall friend and yours, the man with the struggles, Jake Dennis, is back for another go. And well, he's a juggernaut of a driver. And alongside him, new teammate, we miss Oliver Askew, but in comes, oh no, it's Andre Lotterer.
Still repping number 36, still repping his roots at Tom's Racing.
Oh yes.
Still not winning.
Yep, Andretti are back, now with Porsche as a powertrain after BMW's departure from the series at the end of last season. And after an extended round of negotiations, Jake Dennis stays in the 27 car, with Oliver Askew let go and replaced by everyone's favourite bull in a china shop, Andre Lotterer. Andretti was square in the midfield, with Dennis doing a lot of the heavy lifting in season 8. Brackets, 84% of Andretti's points last year came from Dennis. So can Lotterer provide backup? And can Dennis put together another title campaign? Hashtag Jake struggles. Quote from the man himself. And for me, it's very emotional because I'm a very big fan of Mario Andretti and the whole history of the team. I think it's amazing what they've achieved. And to join as an Andre with Andretti, it's also pretty funny and pretty cool. Andre Lotterer, a grown man of 40.
How long did he spend thinking of that quote?
Months. Months, I say.
Like, you know what though, Andretti are probably not going to win the title. Obviously they're the Porsche customer team, but they are going to give us, I think, the most fun. I love this combination of drivers. Feel sorry for Oliver Askew. He's a lovely person, but his confidence just seemed to drop as the season went on last season, and he seems like a real confidence player. Andre Lotterer is full of nothing but confidence, and I just think he's what I love is, you know, Jake Dennis has many positive things to him, but the two of them together, Jake and Andre, they're just going to be the kings of shithousery, aren't they? It's going to be fantastic to watch.
I'm going to love watching it, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. This is going to be fun. Like, Jake Dennis is brilliant. Like, Dennis is one of the guys who can, you could tell that I just don't think Dennis had the car last season more than anything else. I think he was one of those guys. He was like the Lando Norris in Formula One this past season, where I was like seventh, sixth. He's that guy, because it's just he could hammer away the maximum out of that car. But at the same time, just not a good enough car to really challenge the Venturis and the TST cheaters and the Mercedes of the field last year. If Dennis has a car that is decent, I think he can win some races. I really do. I think he's one of the top four or five drivers in this entire series. I really like Dennis. I just really hope that he's got a car underneath him, because man can wheel, but we've not seen enough of Andretti at the very peak of the field for me to suggest that might happen. Okay, Envision. Interesting team this one is going to be. They've got a new addition as well. Number 16, the 16 car, Sebastian Buemi. He's in an Envision. That's a weird vibe.
He left his home.
The Alliance has lost its strongest founding member. And of course, he'll be alongside mainstay Nick Cassidy. We're still going to call him Big Dick Nick for the record, just because we can. So in the 37 car, another solid team on paper for Envision Racing, who's won a race in every Formula E season to date, bar season 7, and a potentially big reshuffle in the lead driver slot. As season 2 champion Sebastian Buemi joins from Nissan to partner up with large appendage Nick Cassidy. Another veteran midfield team, but a step behind the real heavy hitters. Will Buemi's experience help or hinder? Note, they'll also be on Jaguar's powertrains this season after switching from the departing Audi. Quote, they have great resources and great commitment. That's what I like. They are really committed with no distractions. They know what the job is. They'll do their best at it. And as far as I can see, it's relatively apolitical, which is the way we work too. That's Sylvian.
Mohammed Ben Soliam is salivating at this.
That's Sylvian Filippi, team principal over there at Envision. And yeah, they're obviously talking about the Jaguar partnership. And look, I root for Envision. I do, because they're one of the few manufacturers that actually does take the environmental aspect of this gig seriously. They're a very easy team to like for that reason. They've always had strong lineups, but they lost Robin Frins. And Frins is, again, another one of those really big hitters when it comes to driving quality in this series. But they got Buemi. So that's also, you know, if Buemi is in a good car, is there any reason to doubt that he can't be a top hitter again in this series? Because it's been a while.
He's never lost.
I think there is reason to doubt. I'm sorry for stepping over you, RJ. I just feel, you know, but Buemi, as you said in the last podcast, has been pound for pound one of the best sports car drivers. Obviously, that's why he's at Toyota. But ever since Gen 2, he's not quite been the driver who dominated in Gen 1. And I think he's got a lot to prove this season. if I were comparing this to like oldie worldie Formula One, I'd say it's the equivalent of Jordan replacing Giancarlo Fisichella with Damon Hill. You're talking about someone who has had a lot of success in the past, but under a different rule set. And it's going to be fascinating to see if Buemi's mind is fully on this, given that he's still got the Toyota gig.
True. That's a very good point. I mean, we've seen enough of Buemi in the WEC to know that he's still that dude, at least over there. RJ, how do you feel about Cassidy going forward?
Oh, man. I was about to say, you know, I want to see Buemi get back to his best. I mean, it's still frightening that he's not going to be 35 until October. He's still very much a young man in this business. I think Cassidy got those first pole positions, got that first win on the board in a weird race in New York City. Much like Fenestraz, another top quality at sport out of the Japanese top motorsport ladder. He's a super GT and super Formula champion. Things were always expected when he got this deal. Many people believe he should be in Formula One already and racking up wins there, but the cards didn't fall like that. But I expect good things out of Nick Cassidy. I expect him to take another step forward as he gets another year in his belt, potentially even a serious championship threat.
Interesting perspective. I like where that's going. Interesting stuff. Envision are always good. They've not been truly great for a while, and that's going to be interesting. They're like in that. There might be peak of what I call that second tier. Guys who are going to be in the midfield, might win the odd race here and there, will probably get a few podiums, but maybe not enough to challenge for a title. We'll have to wait and see how Buemi plays into that.
Say, I think the biggest question mark for them is going to be, how is the Jaguar powertrain going to be? Because I think, again, the actual team, we know, can run a really tight ship, and we know that both drivers at their peak are as good as anyone in the series.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the big question mark falls on their new powertrain partner.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, I wonder who we're talking about next. Yeah, we'll get to them very shortly, but a quick break to talk about the 2023 calendar as it stands as well. I had to fit the calendar slot in there as well for those who haven't seen all of it. It's a weird calendar in terms of timing. I'll explain why.
It's a big calendar.
It's a big one, 16 races in total. But the date, you'll hear the dates and you'll see what I mean in a minute. Mexico, of course, this weekend on January 14th at the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. Maybe Perez's dad will still be around by the time we get over there.
Still pushing an effigy of Max Verstappen through a desk.
As you do. and then we 2 weeks later, we head to Diriyah again for two more races in Saudi Arabia on January 27th and 28th. Then,
will Vince McMahon be there?
Possibly. Maybe brokering a new deal. We'll have to wait and see if he hasn't driven out half the board of directors by then.
Or torn both of his hamstrings.
Again. round four. We're going, again, new round on the calendar. Hyderabad. We're going to India for the Hyderabad E-Prix on February the 11th. After that, we got a couple of weeks later, we go into Cape Town in South Africa. Finally, we got the Cape Town Street Circuit homologated and on the board for February 25th. Then we take a month out. We're out for a month, and then we go to Brazil for the first race at Sao Paulo's new street circuit on March 25th. So then, weirdly, we take another month off after that, because then we have two races at our favorite track and yours, Tempelhof Airport in Berlin on April 22nd and 23rd.
No, that's not my favorite track on the calendar. It's the one after it for these cars, especially.
Oh, the what's quickly becoming the crown jewel of Formula E races, Monaco, round 9 on May the 6th. The best series that races at Monaco these days, as far as I'm concerned. a month after that, we go to Jakarta for two more races at Indonesia's international E-Prix,
and they don't even need to change the flag for it either.
No, it's it's just a bit bigger, that's all. as you do on June 3rd and June 4th. Then 3 weeks after that, the American round did actually get filled in the end. I'm just checking my notes here. What do you mean it says Portland?
Rip City, baby! Dame time! Embrace the grind!
I say, Formula E has embraced the grind and is going to Portland.
It's going to Portland, full Damian Lillard mode. It's going over there to race at apparently it's going to be an adapted version of Portland International Raceway. It's still quite a big track for Formula E standards, even though it's actually quite small for an IndyCar circuit. So we're going to see how they adapt that one. But of all the American rounds, you chose Portland. Amazing. I love Formula E. May it never change. Complete shithouses. That's on June 24th. 3 weeks after that, we have the doubleheader. I'm glad they've put Rome down the bottom end, because Rome is always a good weekend for Formula E. Two races in Rome on July 15th and 16th. And then, again, season finale. We're going back to the Excel Center in London for a doubleheader in the car park to finish off the season on July 29th and 30th. You see what I mean? How it's kind of a weird calendar with all these month and 3 week long gaps in the middle. Are they trying to cater towards the more sports car happy crowd a little bit here? Because it's a weird one.
I think they are trying to cater towards people that have other world championship gigs and don't want to miss out. Buemi in particular stands out as one of those people. I just like the fact that we're going new places. Hyderabad in India. Mm. You know, listen, India has been hurting for top flight motorsports since Ood International.
Oh, God, they roll out for sports events. I mean, if you ever watched the IPL or if you ever watched their F1 races, the Indian sports fans are out there and they will roll the fuck out.
How about the Cape Town E-Prix though, in South Africa?
Oh, yes.
We're trying to get Kyalami on the F1 calendar. And things are tight, but I have a feeling this could be good. And hey, I know Portland International Raceway is a weird choice, but Portland's a fun city. It kind of fits like the pseudo-progressive tech bro vibe that Formula E is trying to get at. I just wish it was in the city instead of at the raceway, but I understand why they did.
Yeah.
It should be fine.
Here's hoping. No, 100% with you on that one. At least, I think it's a fun calendar. I just hope the gaps don't derail any momentum or anything positive that the series produces, because there is a lot of gaps in between. I know a lot of these drivers in the series pull double duty, and they've obviously had to take that into account. But that is a long Formula E 16 race calendar to have, to go from January all the way to July, and then there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 doubleheader weekends in there as well. It's a bit all over the shop, but it's not dreadful in that sense.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of positive things about the calendar. I do think the gaps are always something that derails the progress of the championship. And I would love Formula E to be the main draw, but we are where we are. We have mostly people who are double jobbing in sports cars or something else. And it's just where we are, sadly. But I did want to mention, Portland, I've never been there. I think maybe the Americans on the conversation can tell me why it's a cool place to go, but I am a little bit alarmed that they've lost Red Hook Brooklyn from that, because I think the New York City E-Prix was something that they could big up just because of the name. And I think
what I understand was that there was logistical issues regarding construction in that area, and that's why they couldn't bring it back this year.
Yeah, I do remember hearing that.
Probably right. And obviously it's great that Formula E has a race in Africa, particularly South Africa, because that's been starved of global motorsport for a while. But because it's in Cape Town, we've lost the perennial sub and many people's favorite race, Marrakesh. So
that's a darn shame.
And of course we've not had Formula E in Paris for a few years. So there are other races which could feature in this calendar and make it even better. I'm indifferent about Jakarta. I didn't think it made for a particularly exciting looking track on TV last year, and I would be perfectly okay if Formula E never went to Saudi Arabia again, but we are where we are, and I understand why it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all know the reasons why on that one. We try. When you put it like that, Sacha, there's actually quite a few decent rounds we are still missing, but you're absolutely... Oh, Jason...
Punta del Este.
Yeah,
Jason's got the right idea.
In capital letters, where's Punta del Beste?
You're goddamn right. Where is Punta del Este, the Punta del Beste?
It's doing another form of electric motorsport with, big raid cars or something. Boo! Anyway... Let's get back into the rest of these teams. We've got four to go, folks. And next up is Jaguar. Fun fact.
Go, Andre. Go and meet your fate. I had to.
It's only fair. Fun fact, this is the only unchanged driver lineup in the entire field this season. Seriously. In the number 9 car, Mitch Evans, championship runner-up last year, and Sam Bird in the number 10 car. So, yeah, yet so far for James Barclay and the Jaguar Racing Team last year. Mitch, bruh, put in a hell of a shift to push Duffel Van Dorn for the title before that horror DNF in London. But Sam Bird's worst season in Formula E to date dragged the team down to fourth overall. They're almost certainly going to need more from the series people's champ in Sam Bird Up, who had his first winless season in Formula E. But will the third time be the charm for Mitch Evans and title campaigns? Also, shout out to them for borrowing the reflective liveries for 2023 from Faraday Future. Remember them? Quote.
No. I don't.
Good.
Does anyone?
I can remember that the entire brand name was a lie because they were neither Faraday nor did they have a future.
Yeah, you know.
You want to talk about companies that could be on a future episode of Slap Shoes, Liars, Thieves, and Lawyers? That might be.
That's up there. quote: I'm incredibly proud of what we achieved last season. We had our biggest points haul to date, but we know we can do better, and we are here to compete for the world championship. We are confident in the Jaguar I-Type 6 and in the strength of our talented team, and I look forward to seeing what this season will bring. That's James Barclay, team principal, and famous table basher, I should say, when pole apps don't quite come together. I'm saying nothing here about Jaguar and their title chances. I've been burned too many times. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you know the rest. Damn.
I don't know where to be with Jaguar because they're always there, but they can never quite get over the line.
Yeah. We know Mitch Evans is good.
Mitch, bro, I'm still mad. I'm still mad about Mexico from a couple of years. It's okay. We know he's a proven quantity. Bird, we need to see a reversal of the trend from last year because he just wasn't hitting the heights that we're used to seeing from Sam Bird.
Yeah, and it was completely mysterious why that was for much of the season. Sam Bird sometimes has a problem where if things aren't going his way, and this is maybe a bit of a David Coulthard complex, he will sometimes lose his head when the car isn't perfect or when it's not behaving the way that he thinks it should. And obviously, Mitch Evans, you know, Jaguar is his team. He's been there since the start. If I'm going to pick one of those drivers as a title shot, it's going to be Evans every way.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Look, I will never blame you if you pick Evans to win a title. He has been basically the second best driver in the series now for 2 or 3 years. And Rome specialist. So given we're doing 2 in Rome again this season, there's a good chance Mitch might take both of them. He loves it there. It's a genuine Formula E banker round. You don't get many of them. It's like Marc Marquez in MotoGP whenever an anti-clockwise track rolls up. Certainly enough to keep an eye on. I like Jag. They need more from Sam Bird. Mitch Evans is not the problem here. And if anything, last season proved they have got something to win a title. Definitely. It's just they need to just polish up a little bit more than anything else, I would say. Next up, ABT. The app name is back. Yay! Apt Cupra Formula E team. And they made a big old poach to get Robin Frins in the team in the number 4 car. As well as the returning Nico Müller as well. The Apt name is back, surviving the split from Audi and partnering with Cupra, the electronic touring car makers that won the ETCR double in 2021 and 22. They'll be running on Mahindra's power units and a rejuvenated Robin Frins after a difficult final season with Envision, a decision he chose himself after his performance manager left in the middle of last season. With him will be 2-time DTM runner-up Nico Müller, who's made a handful of appearances in the Dragon Penske blender of seat fillers. Safe to say, Robin is modest about the brand's returning chances. Quote, I'm not saying the Mahindra is the best car. Far away from that at the moment, and I still think the DS looks very strong, but if we get a half-decent package, we can do good things through the year. For sure, we will struggle at the beginning of the season. For sure, we will be off the pace, especially in the race. I believe we'll be off the pace, but at least we have the good brains to get things turned around through the year. I'm actually stunned at how modest Robin's been here.
I say that sounds the opposite of confident. That sounds like his big concerns.
Yeah, which is weird because I did some digging into this. Robin was offered an extension at Envision. He turned it down. He actually left Envision to go to this new team with Apt and the Apt name coming back. He wasn't happy about the fact his performance manager left the team mid-season. And then after that, he felt like his performances dropped off in the second half of the year, which does add up. If you look at the Wikipedia, he was not happy about it, and it showed clearly. But he looks like he's. I mean, I don't want to say he's okay with it, but it looks like he knows where this new team is at, and clearly not at the front of things.
He knows where they're at right now because this team didn't exist last year. Apt was not around. They have come back thanks to a partnership with Cupra, who have had success in electric touring cars. They are the upscale brand of Seat, which is, I believe they're still part of Volkswagen Audi Group.
Yes.
So they still have, so Volkswagen Audi still has a foot in the door somehow.
Mm.
Yeah, and the Cupra thing is just a branding exercise for now, although you never know what might happen in Gen 4. The thing that intrigues me here, and the reason why I think they'll be okay, you know, with a few early struggles, is because obviously Robin Freund's perfectly rapid. Nico Müller didn't really get the chance to show anything at Dragon. Is a much better driver than he looked there, as you know, as DTM would show. I think that the fact that they are working effectively as one team with Mahindra, the works team, does mean that they're going to get a lot more from their development than maybe some of the customer teams that are split a bit more. Mm. And I would look at that as maybe being a bit of a boon. I would also say, you know, Freund's wasn't just moving into the dark here because he was already an Audi Works driver. He already knew the Apt personnel. So mm-hmm. I think they're going to be okay eventually.
Yeah, a team maybe to watch second half of the season, maybe.
Ooh, that secondhand surge going to be good.
Yeah, Nico Müller can certainly drive a bit, hopefully with a bit of a better team than what he was when he was with Dragon back in the not-so-good days. Ah, boy. Right. So next up, to end off the field, the strongest teams from last year having big old rebrands. The artist formerly known as Venturi, now Maserati MSG Racing. And, this is a strong team. In the seventh car, they've poached Maxi Günther. That boy's quick. And in the 48 car, everybody's favorite, second favorite Formula E driver, Ettore Mortara, third in last year's championship in there as well. Edo back for another run. For the first time in 60 years, the Maserati name is back on the front of a single-seater world championship, and they're taking on a heck of a team. The artists formerly known as Venturi were runners-up in the Constructors' Championship last season, only losing up to their bigger brother factory team. But Maserati insists they're here for keeps, sharing their powertrains with DS Penske in a handshake deal made last year, in combination with keeping most of Venturi's key staff. Driving for them will be a perennial title contender in Ettore Mortara after back-to-back years in the top three of the standings. Alongside Ettore will be Maxi Günther, who hopefully will finally have a solid home to nurture his proven speed. I still want to say, I think he's still the youngest winner in Formula E history. I don't think anyone younger than him's won a race.
I believe you are correct.
Don't quote me on that, but I believe he's the youngest ever FE winner. Former DS Reserve driver James Rossiter will join as team principal after Susie Wolf and Jerome D'Ambrosio moved on.
Another Super GT legend in a leadership position. It's all about me.
I mean, well, this is another one of the big off-season stories. Maserati back in single-seater motorsport, and they've rebranded from Venturi, which was a top two team in the field already. They've kept all the staff on. They've arguably. I mean, I wouldn't. Maxi might not quite be Lucas Degrassi, but he's got speed. That is, we know that for sure.
He won in both of his seasons with BMW. He's quick.
Oh yeah,
he's quick, and I think you're getting longevity there well. If he's there for the long haul, and you've only gone and gotten the best powertrain from all the rumblings coming out of testing.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this combination. Mm. I mean, I make no bones about this. I was a Venturi fan. I've always been a Mortara fan. I think that Mortara is a really good-natured guy, and he deserves all the success he's got. And he's thoroughly rapid. And obviously, has been through his career as the Mr. Macau nickname, we'll tell you. But Gunter's an interesting one because, yes, he's got speed, but he lost a lot of confidence at Nissan, and he didn't really get the machinery to show how quick he was. And he obviously knows that he is sloppy seconds because they really wanted Nick De Vries as well.
They
so there's a lot of factors going into that. And but yeah, that Maserati MSG combination, don't be fooled by the branding exercise. It's not a new team. This is already a well-oiled machine.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they're going to do well. And also, a lot of people have been saying that it's a rules quirk or a rules break that's allowed them to use the DS powertrain. It's not. You're allowed to use the same powertrain as another team.
Yes.
It's within the
Absolutely.
Rules.
Absolutely. I mean,
who the hell was saying that? This has been a thing for literally since customer powertrains became a thing.
I suspect
years ago.
I suspect a certain media company might have exaggerated that to get a quick headline out of it.
Possibly a hyphenated media company.
Yeah, which I'm totally not an employee for now. Anyway, great place, well, I'll say, if I do say so myself.
Try the veal. It's fantastic. Oh, of course,
bastard. Yeah. But yeah, look, I think this is a great team. Voltara is about as rock solid and a driver as you get in this series. The artists formerly known as Venturi are a very, very well-run team. Honestly, I've said to people, I hope Susie is moving on to get the Williams team principal gig in F1 because I think she's done an outstanding job with this team in the time she was with them. She deserves a bigger opportunity, and she's done fantastic work here. Genuinely as well, I love the fact they already said publicly they're in defiance of the FIA's new rule change. Apparently they are going to have the rainbows on their car no matter what. Like James Rossiter is a good egg, and they're a very, very easy team to root for.
They won't have a driver who has to stare at every weekend and start melting on the inside.
Yeah,
too.
That helps. That helps.
I mean, the size of this dub, substantial. Yeah,
Venturi's management, DS's powertrains, top tier level driver, potentially very fast outsider who's a bit on the younger side of things still. They tick every box. As far, it wouldn't surprise me if Venturi goes all the way in this year. They've got interesting competition at the front though, because the artists formerly known as Mercedes are now, hang on, McLaren?
It really does feel like 1997 all
over. It really does. The Neon McLaren Formula E team. And they've blown the team up as well in terms of driver lineup, because in the number 5 car, Jake Hughes is here, long-standing veteran of the Road to F1 junior ladder, and returning in the number 58 car, Rene Fast?
Rene Rast is Rene Fast.
Oh, yeah, we've seen him before. We knew Mercedes was departing Formula E towards the end of last year, but we were all surprised when we found out Motorsport's favorite verbal agreeer, Zak Brown, inherited the 2-time constructors and 2-time drivers' champs into the McLaren racing family. It's a whole new driver pairing for the papaya as Jake Hughes makes his series debut, a veteran of the Road to F1 junior ladder, and Rene Rast returns after leaving Audi a couple of years back. We know that Rast is fast as hell when fully dialed in, so McLaren is going to be an intriguing team to watch. Also, one of the fastest teams at the Valencia test, but you never believe it if you ask DM James, their team principal, who's staying on from the Mercedes era, and they'll be running Nissan's powertrains. So, quote, "There's a lot of work left to go before we're anywhere near the level we need to be," he said. "One thing that I have noticed is that even when compared with last season in Gen 2, where there was a feeling that the delta between the various teams was closing, coming here to Valencia, I've noticed up and down the pit lane a distinct improvement in the operations overall. We need to continue to find improvements in our own operation to make sure that we can stay in the competition." So Ian James was playing it down. I know a certain hyphenated media program was actually gassing them up quite a bit, saying that, you know, they think McLaren might be a top contender out of the box, which that could be quite the observation. I don't know. I mean, Sasha, I'm asking you first and foremost, like, where do you think this team fits? Because this is an interesting one.
It is an interesting one, and I would be a fool to make a prediction on this. The one thing I would say McLaren have done well here is they've pretty much stayed out of things. So they've inherited the perfect machine, but in terms of the Mercedes team, as far as I'm aware, they've kept most of the staff from that Mercedes team and just given it the funding it needs to continue doing well. That they haven't looked for ways that they can make it more mid. I know that you all think McLaren are quite a mid organization on this podcast. I honestly don't know with Jake Hughes. The one thing I would say is I didn't know with Jake Dennis when he came into Formula E. I hadn't been following his career either. So the fact that you've got a British guy called Jake coming in, who I'm not particularly aware of, except for a few thirsty Instagram posts, suggests that there could be something on here. Also,
Hughes is like, he has been plugging away at the junior formula ladder for a decade.
Yeah.
Like, he is overdue a shot in something bigger than this. And I get the impression it's not because he was a marginal talent, but just for whatever reason, he could never string it together promotion. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rene Rast was probably pound for pound, the most impressive driver in his one full season with Audi. So
Without doubt, he made Lucas Degrassi look silly their 1 year together.
Well, he made the entire DTM field look silly for several seasons. So he's the perfect hire.
Yeah, like when Rast was at Apt and Audi Sport, there was a few drives he had in that car where he looked like he was the fastest dude in the series. Straight up, he is stupid fast when he wants to be. That's a good guy to build a team around if you're going to go outside the conventional paddock and the cycle of names we've normally seen in Formula E for the last year or so. That's a damn good guy to build a team around. Everybody who knows their motorsport and knows Rene Rast knows that. Jake Hughes is a bit of a wild card to me, but again, the guys in the sim room swear by him, and they know he's a good team player sort of guy. So I look forward to seeing what he gets on with. Hard to place them as a team. Don't really know how strong Nissan's powertrains are, relatively speaking. Again, the murmurs at the test was positive. Ian James played it down quite a lot. They could be the most interesting wild card going into this season because they're coming off the back of, you know, winning the series last year in terms of at least the team as we knew it back then, or came off winning the constructors title, but they also had two solid drivers in Stoffel and Nick, two champions. Yeah. So it's a wild one.
Ian James is always going to play it down. His background's in management. He knows not to raise expectations, but he also knows all of the staff that the team brings forward under the new McLaren name, and I think he'll be quietly confident. The one question mark I think probably he has and everyone has is that Nissan powertrain, because until we put the cards down on the table in Mexico, we just don't know.
Okay, just before we get out of here real quick, we'll go around the horn. Gentlemen, who do you think will win the Constructors title?
I want to defer to our guest to make our first predictions. Who will win the championship?
Go on, Sasha. You first.
Wow. This is something I should have prepared for. I would say that a strong bid for a strong prediction for the constructors' title or the team's title, I would say Jaguar, and I think that Mitch Evans is long overdue a driver's title. However, I would lose my shit if Mortara won it for MSG Maserati.
So, okay. Are you actually going to be the one that's brave enough to go with Jaguar?
I'm going to go with Jaguar because I'm too scared to go for MSG Maserati, yes.
Wow. Run that sentence back. He said he was too scared to go with to go with MSG and went with Jaguar instead.
I just don't like predicting for the title someone who I actually like.
That's fair. That is fair. That's
also, if you know your basketball, titles typically don't come around MSG. It's not Madison Square Garden.
Oh. Really? King's not even here to defend himself.
You just pulled the man's pants down. That's not fair. Jesus.
Give the man right of reply. Jesus.
We love Ragnar King's work at Jalopnik.
Of course we do.
Cam, who do you think is going to win the title if it's not Antonio Felix da Costa and Pascal Wehrlein?
It's not going to be. This most recent season has beaten that confidence out of me, which is clearly why I'm going to predict someone else, and then Porsche is going to run the field over. I'm going to say Maxi Gunter and Maserati are going to win.
Wow! Maxi Gunter.
I think giving that man equipment worthy of his speed, I think he's going to do some very impressive drives
that
this year.
That might be the boldest prediction we've ever had on this channel. That is...
I like this man. I like Gunter. I like him as a driver.
Like, remember this one, folks. We're going to come back to it in August. it's going to be fun if this one blows up in his face. RJ.
I am the one that has the clairvoyance to predict that Penske, as we all know, will succeed in anything they set out to accomplish, and that Stoffel Van Dorn will repeat his champion picking DS Penske to win the team's title and Stoffel Van Dorn to win the driver's title for second year in a row.
Wow, okay.
And that Jay Penske will finally be invited to the family cookout.
Oh, for God's sake.
No longer the black sheep of the family. I love that it's already gone in our Discord that Cam has picked Maxi Gunter, and the supporters general section of our Discord have lost their collective shit. Love that. Bold. I like it. I can't do Jaguar again. I can't. They've burned me too many times.
Do it. Do it, you coward. You were so close. You were closer than you thought you were going to be last season.
I honestly didn't think it would hold up as long. It was only really London that was the death sentence for Mitch Evans in the end, because he was right up there until that point. Do I dare pick Mitch Evans for a third year running? Oh, I'm tempted. Maserati is a team. I got a good feeling like Maserati will get it. First time of asking as the end, even though they're really Venturi. Driver's title. Jeff.
Jeff. A lot of DS powertrain.
Lot of DS powertrain on display. I'm going with what the rumors say, and if the rumors are good and the Penske team is good, I have more faith in Jeff to just rack up points and just get the results. I got a feeling Maserati's got the best. I actually am with Cam to a degree that Maxi Gunter, I think, will be a great rear gunner at worst for Maserati. So I think they could overall win the team's title. But, it's a bit all over the place here. But that is going to be a fun one. 101 minutes. That's about that. So that was our Formula E season preview, everybody. First race this weekend in Mexico City. Do check it out. Please go out of your way to watch it if you enjoy Formula E, because they need the help they can get right now. Channel 4's YouTube channel for us Brits, if you haven't already. It's free.
CBS Sports for all of you in America, which means you're probably finding other ways to watch it. I'm sure you don't have to tell us about it. You don't have to tell yourself.
Exactly. So like I said, the UK folks, Channel 4's YouTube channel, if you want to catch everything live. Channel 4 Sports, I believe it's called on YouTube. So do subscribe to them over there if you want to. Watch every session, free of charge, on YouTube. Can't go wrong with that, I suppose. But before we get out of here one more time, thanks again for all the kind words regarding the new full-time job. That's not bad, if I do say so myself. It certainly beats the bookies, let me tell you. It's been nice to get out of the system after 6 years, I promise you. YouTube.com/Motorsport101, Facebook.com/Motorsport101, Motorsport1.com, our website, our Twitter's @Dre_WTF1, RJ O'Connell @CUGLY917, Linktree.com/MotionE as well.
/motion_E.
Thanks, Sasha, for facts that I appreciate that, man. Please check out the Motion E podcast if you liked what you heard. Sasha's one of the best in the biz for covering Formula E. He's fantastic, and I will wholeheartedly say right now, live on the air, one of the best guests we've ever had on this show. It's been absolutely tremendous.
Thank you, Dre. It's been so much fun. Thank you.
You're welcome back anytime, my friend. Thanks for joining us as ever. I'm going to get out of here and wrap my head against the wall and realize what a crazy day I've had. So until next time, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell, Cam Buckley, and Sasha Garlick. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. Thank you very much for watching, and I'll catch you guys soon. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Do you get that kind of exhalation and that feeling of relief when a podcast is finished as well?
Oh God, yeah, every time.
it just hits you, doesn't it? It's like the euphoria of knowing you've got nothing else to do for a while.
Usually, it's the fact that we've avoided audio issues.